Flight Response is the story of a skater's journey through life in the late 20th and early 21st century. The flight takes off in Aberdeen, Scotland in the 1980s. It goes through Glasgow in the 90s and moves through the California skate industry in the early 2000s. We begin in present day with a reflection on some of the hidden forces that have fueled the flight. We hope you enjoy it, or at least find something useful in it. Okay. This is Flight Response with John Rattray. That's me. It's a series of audio recordings exploring things I find interesting and helpful in life. I'm a dad. I ride bicycles. I've been known to skate on skateboards. I'm both the adult child of an alcoholic and a fan of science. I appreciate questions like, why is the sky blue? Why is water wet? And why did Judas grab the Romans while Jesus slept? And if childhood lasts a lifetime, when is that good, and when is it not so good? This is April 2024 that I'm recording this. Today, I want to talk a little bit about my own understanding and experience of addiction, and three things that have helped me. Those three things will be stories. The stories we tell are way more powerful than they ever get credit for. We tell stories to each other, but also to ourselves, sometimes without realizing. Community, being part of one is existential, and then practice and failure, without which we get nowhere and learn nothing. So, addiction. It's an insidious, creepy beast. I started drinking alcohol sometime around when I was age 10 to 13 years old. I remember swiping some sort of hard alcohol from the booze cabinet of my friend Martin's parents at a Christmas party, mixing it with our Coca-Cola and feeling the effects. Drambuie, I think it was, hidden behind that fancy paneled door with the dainty little brass hoop handles. Another memory that pops up, my buddy Steve hands me a beer at a house party when we were 13, the first time I stay out all night without calling home, causing my grandparents untold levels of panic and stress. We drank more and more through teen years and into the 20s. I subsequently only managed to finally stop drinking a bit more than a year ago, in my mid-40s. Drinking had had quite the run there. And so far, I haven't had an alcoholic drink since 2022. We'll see what happens tomorrow, but today, and so far, that's how it's been going for the past year, and some change. And that I've managed to keep the brakes pumped for over a year is a fact that really fuels a sense of happiness when I reflect on it. I had tried stopping at various times before and blew it. I only managed short stints. This time, thinking back, there's a number of things that I tried over the years, and all of them helped set the stage in my brain in their own little way. Changing in life takes practice and effort. Those wee neurons need to have time and stimulus to grow and get stronger, with reps like muscle tissue does. It's all biology at the end of the day. I threw many things at my brain. I listened to an interview with the founder of One Year No Beer. I tried giving up for a week. I managed 3 months at one point in my early 30s. I read a book about the psychology of drinking, and much later, and more impactful, a book about the neurobiology of addiction. Last year, there's those three big things that pop up that I know helped me finally stick to it. One is visualization of the story I want to be able to tell, but can't until I make it true. Another is that knowledge that you're part of the community, and then the third is learning to notice the urge to drink and practicing some mental judo to deal with it right there in the moment. As I practiced noticing the urge to drink, what I found was most of the time I would grab a beer, it was pure reflex, rote Pavlov's dog reflex. Along this journey, I also introduced a tracking habit via an app on the phone. The app provided some daily feedback to me on how I was doing, and for the first year and a half, I sucked. Another interesting avenue to explore is why the urge to drink is there in the first place. If we head down that path, why is the urge to drink there? I can speak only for myself, but here's how I think of it. For as long as I can remember, almost as long, I've been interested in the idea of being haunted with ghosts. Now, I don't think ghosts exist anywhere outside of our own powerful but highly fallible imaginations. But I do love the idea of ghosts, because they're wonderful as metaphors for unprocessed trauma. I've written about some of these ghosts in scenes associated with fear, anger, embarrassment, or pain. Those things that came as part of the package deal included with a terminally alcoholic dad. In the parking lot outside one of the pubs he was still allowed to drink in, Mum in tears at the thought of having to go back from our summer getaway at the church camp, Ashley grabbing the steering wheel as Dad swerves and near misses oncoming traffic. The write-ups in the local news commented on by classmates at school, the hospital, the coma, the funeral. Those scenes play back in my head, popping up throughout life, like little film snippets flashing up on the wall from an old film projector that flips on seemingly at random, but probably never completely at random. Those scenes still flash up from time to time, but having worked at least some of them into words, their effect on my emotional systems has diminished, I think. And putting them into words is an exercise which puts us in control of those flashback scenes as we render them outside our own heads. Some of those words have made it into a comic or two. Those are the ghosts in the machine, the wee gremlins, devils that we're better off knowing, looking directly at, capturing, and pulling them out from the complex gears of the machine and describing them, at least in a journal. Talking of journals, if I look back to the start of 2023, I had decided to try to at least not drink for January. After that, I would take one day at a time. I had tried to cut down on drinking before. I'd done 3 months here, a week or two there, since I was in my early 30s. But each time I would slip back into long periods of drinking too much each day, which turned into a week and a month, and on it would go. Not a pretty picture. I was falling asleep on the couch before the rest of the family went to bed, waking up, dry mouth, fully clothed, 2 a.m., stumbling to the bathroom or just drifting back into whatever state of sedation my body's chemistry was capable of. It has been noted by sleep expert Matthew Walker, we can confuse sleep with sedation. Those are not the same. Looking back on it, it was like some odd pattern of self-harm. Very strange to live like this night after night. Not ideal. Now, we mentioned the powerful nature of the human imagination. Luckily, I could imagine much better options. Choosing and doing the option was the hard part. I had become stuck as a drinker. Drinking John was my view of myself. It had become clear to me that drinking John was a subpar option to choose for my son's experience of life on planet Earth, as my ability to be the calm, trustworthy source of care dissolved into something else, something unreliable, inconsistent, frustrating. Not my own dad level, that was the whole haunted thing. But if I really stopped and considered it, it was very certainly living on that side of the aisle, the alcoholism side of the aisle. In that aisle I'm talking about. We describe politics like this too, which side of the aisle is this or that policy. But the aisle here runs down the middle between sobriety and alcoholism. If you can walk that aisle, dipping a little on the alcohol side, but mainly sitting on the sobriety side, then that's good for you. Well done. But for me, doing that was taking way more energy than I'm willing to give it at this stage of the game. So for now, I'm just staying on the sobriety side. It's easier that way. I like myself better on that side. I also had two alarm bell incidents in 2022, two that I can remember. And I have old friends now either dead or suffering with alcohol as a suspect, at least, an aiding and abetting accomplice to ongoing insidious little infractions against better judgment and health. Another epiphany is this. There's a narrative that alcohol counters stress, but alcohol in the human body is a stress. We're suppressing our nervous system's ability to feel the stress in the short term, but now your liver has to work harder to deal with this toxin. It's stress on top of stress. So it had taken many tries, much pondering, false starts, but I finally managed to stop for a day, then a week, then a month, now a year. I might drink tomorrow, but I have a feeling I won't bother because that would be pointless. I've been drinking for years at this point, and I know the way it goes. And I have to say, not drinking feels amazing. And it's not that I feel entirely wonderful all the time. I still feel like garbage, and I think that's something to do with the inordinate amount of sugary snacks I've been stuffing in my face. One thing at a time. That sugar thing is as if some other pathway was forged deep in my brain when I was a young lad, countering boredom or worry with a sugar buzz, or just succumbing to the fact that short-term sugar's amazing. Sugar feels like we're getting something we need. Something that was missing. It calms something. The Cadbury cream egg solace of my youth, in through the mouth and off into the bloodstream, a sweet chemistry bath for the nucleus accumbens and ventral tegmental area. I'm not a pro-neuroscientist. You can read around it yourself if helpful. But my simplistic understanding of what's going on here is that a couple of quite famous actors in this little Broadway play of activating our pleasure and reward systems are dopamine and endorphins. I said I'm not a pro-neuroscientist, but I believe we're safe to say that dopamine and endorphins are somewhat in cahoots with each other and are relevant to understanding addiction. And on that, it turns out endorphins is a portmanteau. It's two words in one. Endorphins is a combination of endogenous morphine. Now think about those feelings associated with the ghosts we mentioned. Fear, anger, embarrassment, pain. What better antidote than a wee drop of morphine? And there it is, at the end of a chemical chain that begins with alcohol or sugar. I mean, we need some form of sugar. Glucose fuels the brain. But too much, too processed, not the best, so working on that. And I should say, keeping alcohol out is not some... It hasn't made me feel absolutely wonderful emotionally all the time, either. The old anxiety systems still flare up like an over-revving old race car engine at all sorts of moments. But it's an engine I know the sounds and mechanics of now. And in general, to be fair, anxiety is a necessary reflex. Keeps us sharp and alive, it prompts us to ensure safety, but it can get counterproductive in this mental world we've built, this silly prison we've trapped ourselves in. My own anxiety, I believe, I haven't done a test or anything, but I've compared lived experience with my wife, Philippa, and based on that and general observations, my own anxiety is a bit more hair trigger than average, and that's still the case. But I'm aware and I know how to manage it without pouring alcohol on it. I have some control. That's the amazing part. That, and I finally feel like I'm being the best dad I can be. So, I gave up the drink a year ago, or a bit more. I might drink tomorrow, but I'm not drinking today. That's the main thing. One of the other things that's rattled around in my little brain is that life is this game of chance. We have these broad statistics about life expectancy and health outcomes that we can look at and get a sense of where we might land based on how we're living. And I'm not here to tell you what to do. This is just me saying what's been rattling around in my own head. But alcohol has impacts across multiple areas in the body. It can lead to health outcomes that are seriously not rad. And we know that certainly beyond so-called moderate drinking, taking in alcohol puts us at a higher statistical chance of stepping into a world of pain with issues stemming from the liver, digestive system, cancer, and all sorts of stuff that doesn't sound fun. There's credible, rigorously tested info out there. You can check it out and make your own decisions. I'm not here to tell you what to do. Just recounting what's been in my head in case it's helpful. All I'm really saying is we can make choices that give us a better chance of staying on or above the average line for better long-term health, if we're lucky enough to stick around and get older. And then more immediately for the near-term benefits. So, Joan Didion had her year of magical thinking. This has been my year of magical non-drinking. And I'd said a couple of times here that I'd tried a few times to stop drinking. And there are three main things that help me finally stick to it. And I can't help but think through it in terms of the brain's main systems, understanding more about their development. From before we were born all the way through childhood into adulthood, and their key functions. That's helped me clarify my own predicament more than anything else I've learned. From the top down, the cortex, the limbic system, the brainstem. It's funny, I only recently learned this, but Plato, the old Greek philosopher, he thought about human experience in terms of this three-part theory of the soul. He used the analogy of a charioteer driving that chariot with two horses. Charioteer is our reason, which maps well to the cortex in our brains. The horses and the are the spirit and the appetite, which map well to the limbic and brainstem. And with that, I'd be remiss and get into trouble from neuroscientists if I don't remind us that the triune or three-part model of the brain is just that. It's just a model. It's a simplified heuristic. Useful for basic understanding, but know that the brain's operations are more complicated and nuanced in real life. But as I said, the model has been helpful in picturing the main points of what's happening. So here we go. Number one of the three things I've mentioned, storytelling, or visualization of a desired story that I will be able to tell years from now when, with some luck, I'm an old man. I use the noggin, the creative cortex, what Plato referred to as our reason. The special little thoughtful brain cells up on the top shelf inside the skull. Slower, energy intensive, but a powerful piece of kit. Use that to create the story I want to tell myself many years from now. I imagined myself in the future, in my 80s. Halley's Comet has come back, and Ivor and I have gone to find a place to view it together. The story at that point is that I had stopped drinking years ago in my 40s, and that has made all the difference to my ability to deal with life's challenges. My relationship with Ivor and Philippa, confidence, motivation, self-care practices, work, creative pursuits. Thing number two, community. A small but strong network of trusted people on the same path. Ben Wall, Brent Achley and the Push Movement. I had dinner with Brent early January, around the anniversary of my own dad's death. I asked him to show me around the building that houses the local adult children of alcoholics meetings. I went to two or three of those and found them somewhat helpful. I wasn't super into the format. It was a bit of a drive to get there. And I also had a bit of a network forming, which I think is a big part of the help those groups provide. It's community-owned, it's peer support. It's building feelings of social safety mediated in the limbic system. And for me, there's Benson Kai at work, there's Chris Bolton, there's more around the wider world with minimal degrees of separation, Elissa. Just knowing I'm not alone helps build strength into those non-drinking branches in my brain. And the amount of people on this path is something I didn't notice till I started looking. Till my radar attenuated and I started picking up the signals more easily. This is learning, really. Our brains contain very robust pattern recognition systems, and learning to slow our roll and intentionally guide those systems is part of what good learning is. So, feeling that encouraging sense you have a group who has your back, strength training, broadly speaking, in the brain's limbic system, where social connection, that existentially vital sense of belonging, is checked and processed. And getting that social support consistently in place gets the belts and gears under the hood there whirring and purring more calmly. Finally, practice. Learning to be mindful of Pavlov's bell. Internally noticing the urge to drink. Using the cortex to observe the brainstem. In terms of Plato's tripartite theory of soul, the equivalent of the charioteer leading the appetite horse, instead of the other way around. In terms of the DNA survival module that is our brain, maybe the HPA axis is a culprit here. We'd have to consult a neurobiology expert to be sure. But it's certain that consuming alcohol fires up the endorphins, or endogenous morphine system we mentioned earlier, which makes little wonder it can get addictive. If you've read The Biology of Desire by Mark Lewis, you'll be presented with such brain terminology as the dorsal striatum and dopamine pathways. And I was taken with his point about the term recovery being misleading. To recover sounds like we're going back to how things were before we were driven by addiction. But we don't go back. We don't recover our previous selves. We grow and build new neural pathways that correspond to healthier default behaviors, and we move forward. The past is still there, physically imprinted inside us, as old branching neural networks. But their strength atrophies over time, as they fall into disuse, and the new non-drinking branches grow bushier and more dominant with use. But we were talking about mindful noticing, interoceptive awareness, sensing what my internal Pavlov's dog was salivating over, and then intervening from the top. At first, it took practice. And at first, we needed to be very intentional, and I needed to really think hard about when the dinner bell triggers occurred throughout the day. When does the urge to drink hit? When I get home from work? The weekend? I also added to the mindful awareness habit a tracking service called Sunnyside and then a reflection. I used an app called Reframe. Both of these things helped build the pathways of intentionality in my brain. It was like trying to beat a tough boss in a video game. I sucked at not drinking for a solid year and a half, tracking every day. Got home, cracked a beer, reset button. Got home, cracked a beer, reset button. Importantly, I gave myself some grace that this is not easily overcome at first. You don't land this first try. The internal dialogue we choose here, the mantra, if you like, has to be, I'm going to be bad at this at first, but I can get good at it. So I kept setting the intention each day and trying, like trying to land a kickflip or shoot the ball on the hoop. And then, very intentional, non-alcoholic beer, herbal tea, soda water. And that soon started to be the default and just the preferred choices. So one day at a time. Maybe I'll drink tomorrow if I decide it's a great idea. But if I reference those scenes from the haunting we've discussed at the start of this little journey, the chances are I'll decide not to. And a year later, here we are.